Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
I've got an organization that typically want to do well, but they're doing things in a way that they've always done and they're comfortable with those. And you want me to change them? They're resistant to change. And you want me to change the way the leaders lead, who've all been promoted for leading the previous way.
Hey, it's David. And you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show. You're in the right place for a podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders. And in this episode, we are going to be taking a look at fun at work and all the different applications there. Hope you're enjoying our rebranding here as we get close to 300 episodes. And if you are, please leave a review. Those really are important for letting other people find the show. Let us know how you're enjoying the show, or you can always shoot me an email with your questions for a future episode at david.dye@letsgrowleaders.com. So today, talking about fun at work, you're going to get some tools to help you introduce relevant, meaningful fun, how you might use that experientially for learning, as well as creating a culture that is enjoyable and people want to be a part of. We'll talk about avoiding the cringe factor and avoiding some of those things I think we can all relate to. And all of this is to improve your team's focus, have more meaningful relationships, improve the stickiness of learning. And ultimately, we really want to help you harness the great potential in every human being. And our guest today to help us do all of this is Phil Geldart. Phil is a highly experienced leadership expert in workplace culture. He's the founder and CEO of Eagles Flight, a company focused on improving individual and team productivity. And prior to founding Eagles Flight, Phil was with Nestle Canada, where he worked for 18 years. The last five of which serving as a member of the executive team as Senior Vice President of Human Resources. He's also the author of a number of books. Phil Geldart, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul. So glad you're here.
David, it's great to be here. Thank you very much for having us on a great topic.
Well, it is a great topic, and I have been looking forward to this conversation. Gosh, I think, Phil, we first connected. It has been several months back, and Now we're finally here. So looking forward, glad we were able to make it work. So, Phil, we're going to talk all about culture, workplace fun, all the rest. But before we do that, I'd like to help our listener get to know you just a little bit more by asking you to take us back, and you can go as far back as you want to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader, however you might define that.
Wow. Well, I did a lot of Christian ministry in my youth. And I was asked at the age of 16 to lead a cabin of boys at this Christian camp. So I moved from being one of the older campers to being the youngest counselor. And David, it was a disaster. Honestly, for 2 weeks, my cabin was like they were out of control, running on the roof. They had no idea what to do at rest period. And I mean, I had zero influence over those kids, and they were hooligans for 2 weeks, and I survived. And when I actually at the end of those 2 weeks, I had to spend a week in bed. I was just wiped out.
You were just tapped.
So I thought to myself, okay, clearly that was not the kind of leadership that was necessary. And I spent quite a bit of time then reflecting on that complete and utter failure. And I thought about some of the best counselors I'd ever had and what they did, and determined in the following year to go back as a counselor and lead the best cabin that camp I'd ever seen, which actually, by the grace of God, actually happened. I did go back. Miraculously, they took me back. And we did have the best cabin. And we went on to always have the best cabin. And then I went on to running the camp and a number of other things. But the difference was I felt that in the first iteration, which was a failure, I was trying to use my authority as the boss to tell them what to do. In the second iteration, I made everything a game. Everything they did for the 2 weeks was a game. And they just had a ton of fun. And as a result, they were much more malleable. And I could, because I knew what the outcome was, then I could kind of guide them in that direction. So it was more fun for me, more fun for them. And everybody wanted to get in our cabin because everything was fun. And I know you didn't ask this, but let me just jump ahead for a moment. Many years later, in my one of my early careers, I was put in charge of training. And fascinatingly, I was told this company does not believe in training. So you can have the job if you want, but you'll get fired in a year because no one will go. Okay, this is great. So I thought, all right. And then, in fact, the VP said, so do you want the job? Because I'm serious. I mean, really, if you can't make it work, we don't need you. And I said, no, I think I can do that, because I had done a lot of training of counselors, directors, and staff in my earlier days. But I hated university. I hated being lectured at. I hated having someone go up there and just spout stuff off. I then went to corporate training programs and they were boring and I didn't like them and I never could remember what they taught. And I got a 2-inch binder I was supposed to review. This is crazy. Nobody. So I was looking back to my counselor days and I thought, if I could make the corporate training fun, people will go. Because, you know, we think fun somehow has this connotation of, well, you know, work shouldn't be fun, but life should be fun. And people like fun. When they stop going to work, they go for fun, right? I mean, whatever your fun is. So you can't say, I mean, even if you're a super senior corporate executive and your fun is being on the golf course, that you do it because it's fun. Right? So to say that fun isn't part of who we are is a bit ludicrous. It's just that no one can figure out how to bring fun into the workplace, because fun can also be very distracting, which is the problem, right? If you're just having fun and you're not getting anything done, shareholders aren't too happy. But you shouldn't just rule out fun for that reason. So I thought, all right, I'm a trainer. I'm probably going to lose my job, but I know how to get people to engage. And you engage when you do things. You don't engage when you're being lectured. You don't engage when you're being told stuff. So you sit in a training course with a lot of PowerPoints and you're supposed to pretend you're something in some kind of a role play. People just can't wait to get over that. So what I did was I created games. And now you think of a game, but these were very sophisticated games. So you would walk into the training class and you'd think, wait a minute, I'm in the wrong place, because you'd be sitting at a table with four other people. There'd be a map on the table. And I'd stand up and say, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the desert. This morning, you're going to be racing across the desert and competing against all the other teams around you. And they go, I'm supposed to be in a course on planning. But in that desert race, they had an opportunity as a group to look at a number of variables, a number of things, but they were essentially racing across the desert, evaluating situations, evaluating circumstances, managing the food and water. And at the end, they got a score. And typically, let me digress. I'll tell you an interesting story. The first time I ran this, I had to deliver training to a factory, and it was one of the best factories in this organization's world. And so they were prima donnas. And I got there and I showed up in the morning, and there was this long row of men, not a woman in sight, with their arms crossed, white lab coats, and they did not want to be there. I mean, you could tell. So I said, well, good morning. I said, how many of you don't want to be here? Every hand shot up. I said, how many of you think that a young punk from head office who's never been in a factory in his life could possibly, has any hope of teaching you anything? And they said, you can't teach us a thing. We are the world's best. We're fantastic. We were told to be here, but it's a complete waste of time. I said, okay, I accept that. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I want you to play a game with me for 2 hours. And if at the end of the game, I'm going to ask you if you want me to keep going or if you want me to leave. And if I leave, you get the rest of the day back. But you got to play the game with all your enthusiasm for the next 2 hours. So that's the deal. I get 2 hours full commitment. And if you like it, I stay. If not, I leave. So what do you want? They said, oh, no. They did a quick cost benefit, right? 2 hours versus the day. We'll play your game. I said, all right. How many of you feel you are fantastic at planning and risk management? Every hand. I mean, David, they're looking at me like I'm an idiot. Of course we're good. Okay. Do you know who you're talking to? I
know who you're talking to.
So we played the game. And in the game, they get all the information up front. And they have access to all the tools and so on. And the best score you can get, you measure your success in terms of getting across the desert into the mountains, collecting gold and bringing it back. So the best you can do is 10 bars of gold. You have 25 days to do 25 game days. 30% of the teams died in the desert. They didn't even make it back. They ran out of food. They ran out of water. Of the ones that made it back, they came back with 3 to 6 bars of gold. So then I did the debrief. I said, this is what's possible, 10 bars of gold. How many of you think you're really good at planning? Well, maybe we weren't that good. How many think you were really good at using your team well? Well, not that good. So let me ask you something. Was this a case study? No. Was this a role play? No. Did you bring the same skills and behaviors that you demonstrate on the job to this game? They said, yeah. I said, okay. So on average, you actually didn't do very well. Let me show you how to get 10 bars of gold in the game and then show you how every principle that you need to get 10 bars of gold will make you better on the factory. And they said, well, that would be really cool. I said, okay, can I stay? They said, you could stay. So because they discovered for themselves, I didn't have to lecture them. I could just out. In the debrief, I could unpack this experience which they had. So they had a ton of fun. We became great friends and, you know, my career did well. But I learned from that the idea of fun doesn't have to be separate from learning. It can coexist with learning, but it's got to have value. There's got to be meaning to it. But if you can do it, then the people get fully engaged. They bring them their full selves to it. And you mentioned at the beginning that, you know, the goal is to release human potential. So can I keep talking here or you want to jump in? Because I'm about to go.
Well, I'll pause just a second to reflect and say, you know, how valuable that experience was as a camp counselor. I too was some things we have in common, those early teenage year failures as leaders with everything running a bucket. Oh, my goodness. And also I was a camp counselor. I get empathize there. You know, the interesting thing, the thing that I love is that you reflect, and I wrote this question down. I was 11 or 12 years old, and I remember the pad of paper I wrote it down. I'm like, how do you bring a group of people together to work together to do something bigger than themselves? Like, it was a question I was literally reflecting, asking myself, like you did, you know, as a young person going, what was it that they were doing? How were they doing it? And, you know, for every leader, just as a practical takeaway, I don't care how old you are, I don't care how long you've been leading, what your role is, that's a practical takeaway right from the beginning, Phil, that you've given us, is reflect on success, reflect on the leaders you respect and how, what did they do? How'd they go about that? And what are the principles underlying it? One of the principles clearly you learned was fun and making it a game, making an influence to tap into people's natural motivations and go from there. So, you reminded me you were talking about your factory workers in their lab coats. Nietzsche said, you know, when it comes to education, never feed the hungry. Like, you created that hunger, like that self-recognition, like, oh, yeah, I do want something. And where now the person's wanting it as opposed to a push, it's a pull. Gosh, anytime we do that as a leader, we're in a much better winning position. Whether you're talking about guiding a team, training a team, what have you. So with that, yeah, where were you going next?
I couldn't agree with you more. If you go to the board and you ask them what's important, they're going to say shareholder value, right? Fundamentally, shareholder value is critical. Now, an organization has got to worry about profit, but they've also got to worry about their role in the environment, their role in the culture, their role in society. They've got to worry about research and development, customers. So there's many things that make up success as you define it in an organization. So all of those things have metrics attached to them. So you can simplify all that by saying the organization's got to produce results. So when I'm talking to CEOs, okay, so what you want to do is you want to improve the results. Oh, yes, it's all about the results. Yes, it's all about the results. It's all about the results. It's all about the results. Good. Every single result that you get in your company is directly as a result of what people do. Well, yeah, that's true.
100%.
So if you want to change the results, you have to change what people do. You can't manage them. You've got to change what they do. And that means you've got to change their behavior. Now, that is incredibly difficult. So they don't know how to do that. So they cheat and bring in tools, processes, system, digital, whatever you want. All kinds of, whether it's a new forklift or a bigger building or a new software, because they want to give the workforce tools in the hopes that will improve the results. And it does, but not significantly, because the behavior doesn't change. So the key to shareholder value and increasing that is changing the behavior. How do you change the behavior of the workforce? And there are two things that have to happen. The first is you've got to change the way the leaders are leading. Everything comes back. You follow your leader, right? I mean, you follow your leader. And the second thing you have to do is you have to give the people guidance on what the new behaviors should be. You have to equip them. So think, okay, wow, I've got an organization that typically want to do well, but they're doing things in a way that they've always done and they're comfortable with those. And you want me to change them? They're resistant to change. And you want me to change the way the leaders lead, who've all been promoted for leading the previous way. So this is like a Herculean task, which is
we should just note that resistance to change that you're describing is rational. It makes sense.
It is
conservation. Like it's not that the person is bad or doesn't.
No, right.
It makes sense. So how do we influence
them? Exactly. It's not malicious. It's just human nature. It's like if I learn to play golf, which I don't know how to play, but, and someone, let's take something like playing squash. I do play squash. And someone teaches me a different way. I'm going to default to the way that's always worked for me. It's just human nature. So the answer then is to say, we have to get at the way in which people change behavior. And you need four things for that. People need to want to change, so they need conviction. So you've got to build, if you don't want to change, you're never going to change. As soon as the CEO leaves the room, you're going to say, that was nice, I'm going back to what I always did. The second thing is you need to show them what to change. So I have conviction, but now I need knowledge. So what do you want me to change? And again, most organizations stop at that. They don't build conviction, but they're really good at telling you what they want you to do differently. The third thing you need is to say, okay, but how does that actually translate in practice? Like, okay, that's great in theory, but when I leave this classroom, how do I actually work out in practice when I've got pressure and customers beating on my door and supplies coming in late? How do I do that? And then the fourth thing you need is you need to hold them accountable for results. So you need conviction, knowledge, skill, and results. You need those four things. And most organizations, firstly, don't have any idea how to actually get it, three out of the four of those, or two out of the four. And you need to equip the leaders. So how do you do that? So I come back to, well, go back to my campus. You can tell them, and you can write memos, and you can put posters on the wall, but nothing is going to change. You have to engage the people. So in my judgment, if you can use fun, if you can harness the fact that people will want to be part of that journey, then you have a much better success. So I come back to, okay, let's get at the conviction and the knowledge through a game, through an experience. And Eagles Flight has got dozens of these that we use. So depending on what you want to do, we put them through a game. We put them through an experience. Let's give the leaders tools that they can use and cascade with their people, that the people see as, hey, this was actually kind of fun. This was neat. We engaged. We learned by doing. So the idea of getting shareholder value, which leads to changing the behavior, leads to, unless the people want to do it, you're dead in the water. And one of the ways to get people to want to do it is to incorporate fun. And that's why you're seeing more and more around things like gamification. You're seeing the new workplace coming in, and they're wanting to bring the kind of things which they do in their spare time into the workplace. So I simply take you through that journey to show that there is actually a direct link between fun as a component of your solution and your desire to improve results. Otherwise, people are going to listen to your podcast and say, so why should I worry about fun? Because you get a better return than you do without it.
We're making everybody hungry here, Phil. So like, I want those results. Yeah, I want a team that, and I love the way you broke it down, those four things. I want to change. What do I need to change? How do I translate that to practice? And then there's the accountability piece. So let's dive a little bit deeper. The listener is sitting here listening going, okay, yeah, I get that. So I'm a middle manager. I am needing to help my team improve performance in a particular area. Okay, how do I do this? How do I make that process enjoyable? How do I help get my team to want to change where I am with what I'm doing? I have seen some some leaders sometimes will try to do this fun, and I'm going to put fun in air quotes because it's not actually fun, and then it becomes cringy, and then there's the accountability on the other end, and the person and their whole team is like, oh, this stinks. That's not what we're talking about. So walk us down the path of how we might do that.
It's a great question. It doesn't happen overnight. You can use tools like experiential learning in your training, but that's not really addressing your issue. So to address that question, David, I need to drop down a level here for a minute. Organizations are made up of adults. And very often they are not treated like adults. They are treated like assets. So an adult is a highly responsible individual. They make life and death decisions every day, whether it's crossing the street or how they bring up their kids. But if you look into most organizations, they put guardrails, boundaries around those people to force them into a way of behaving, which they do. You follow the rules, and that's okay. But that immediately inhibits their ability to be as good as they can be. So here's the way to think about that. And your listeners can do this with us. But think of the worst person you've ever worked for. So in your career, think of the worst person you've ever worked for, and your listeners do the same. Here's what I'd like you to do. From 1 to 10, think of the value you added to the company working for that person with 10 high. Just think of a number. Now, not how hard you worked, not how committed you were, but your willingness to contribute. To what degree did they actually take advantage of that, working for that terrible leader? Okay, so pick a number. Got a number in your head?
I do.
All right. Now, exactly the same question, except that this time I want you to think of the very best leader you ever had and the value you were able to bring to the organization with that leader. Give that a number and subtract the two. What's the difference?
Six.
Okay. So the more senior you are, the higher the number. So you've been around the block a lot. But think about that. 60% more value, David. And for your listeners, it will range anywhere between 2, 6, and 7 or something. But if just take you, 60%, you're the same person. You come to work every day. You want to do the best you can. And the organization is bleeding 60% of your value every day because of your leader. Not because of you, but because of your leader. So now, if I'm the shareholders, I go, I'm paying you leaders and you're just bleeding out 60%. And by the way, that's the most important 60%. It's the initiative. It's the enthusiasm. It's the energy.
Discretionary effort.
Exactly. So when you say, how do I get a leader to actually bring this sort of mindset of fun and engagement, it begins with realizing you are in control of incredibly capable people who are adults. Your goal should be to get them to feel you are the best leader in the world, because then they will give you the best. Now, let's talk about what that looks like. That means in practice, when David comes to you with an idea, you don't say you're an idiot, you've been in this job, get lost. You listen to him. You may not agree, but you listen to him. You give him feedback. You explain to him. When you're about to launch a project, you say, who should we bring on that project to make sure it optimizes its performance? So there's a number of practical things that you do, but they all fall under the umbrella of respect for the individual. So at Eagle's Flight, one of the first things that we tell our people, you're adults. You are charged with delivering on our commitment to the customer. That's it. I don't care whether you work at 2 a.m. or 5 a.m. I don't care if you work all day. I don't care if you go get ice cream at 3 p.m. Just deliver on your commitments and live our values. Mm-hmm. Now, if fun is embedded in the values, the whole organization changes. Because yes, you can have a value of safety, but you can also have a value of something like genuine friendliness, which is not artificial happiness. It's like, hey, one of the things in this company we want you to do is be friendly, enjoy each other's company, and so on. So that whole dynamic changes, not because you have artificially inserted fun, but because you've allowed people to contribute to their most, because you respect what they can do. And that generates fun, initiative, creativity, innovation. Go ahead. You look like you want to jump in there.
Oh, I do. That is so vital what you're saying there. So that I just want to encapsulate that for the listener. But if you're listening going, okay, I want all those things that Phil's talking about for my team. How do I get there? It's not something you do externally to begin with. The very first thing is it's a self-reflection and examination of how am I looking at, thinking about, and ultimately treating the people who I'm leading. Am I looking at and treating them as capable, functional, adult human beings who are capable of making all the important decisions that they are making in life? Am I thinking about people in that way? And then am I acting in that way? That comes before anything else. And then it's the infusion of fun in the values, in the way we do our work together, not as an add-on, not as a band-aid, not as a substitute. Or I like to think about, like, if you bake a cake and it's only half baked and then you try to ice it with fun, you just have a mess.
Exactly.
It's the cake is the values and the fundamentals of all of those things that you're talking about and how we're interacting with each other. I just think that is so important. So I really appreciate you drawing that out for us.
So let me take your analogy, which is a great analogy. In my mind, fun in the workplace falls into two categories. We have ping pong tables and we have ice cream sundaes on Wednesday, and we have birthday parties. I mean,
Taco Tuesdays.
Yeah, so that's fun. But there's also the fun of winning, the fun of performing at a peak level, the excitement of working with colleagues that can accomplish amazing things, the fun of getting notes back from customers that say, like, you changed my life.
Exactly.
Because that fun is defined more as enjoyment, engagement, excitement, energizing, which is what we get when we have fun. When you play tennis or squash or golf or whatever, the fun is what you feel as a result of it. I that was great. That was really neat. I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I worked on a project with 4 colleagues. Our values were genuine friendliness and high quality, and we blew it out of the water. Man, this is amazing. So in that, you have to be careful that the fun, the ping pong and the dinners and so on, that's the icing on the cake. The real cake is creating an environment where I truly enjoy what I'm doing. I truly enjoy who I'm working with. I truly feel like I'm being treated like an adult. I truly feel like I can contribute to my fullest. Man, you're never going to leave that company. Why would I leave? This is like great. Define great. That's just another definition for it. This is really fun here. So that comes only when the leaders create the right culture, the right dynamic, have the right respect. So when we have to create that in a company, typically, and I said, okay, you got to give me access to your leaders. And the senior executive said, no, we want you to train our people. I go, yeah, I know. But your people follow your leaders. Exactly. I got to get your leaders to think differently, behave differently, understand that they are in control of the potential of the workforce and that they have the ability to get 60% more than they're getting now, but they have to change. How are we going to get them to change? No problem. I have training courses where I do conviction, knowledge, skill, and results. And they walk away and go, okay, you've given me practical tools. I've discovered for myself through experiential learning that they work. I'm all in. So the mindset is the first step. And then you have to take and guide them to new ways of behaving, not by lecturing them, but now I'm back to experiential learning, which is fun again. And they go, that was really cool. So you see how it's kind of a holistic view. All right. You're a great listener, David. So jump in. I'm sorry. I just kind of got on a roll.
Well, hey, we're here to learn from you today. So as you were talking about the quality of the cake, and I love a good cake. So I'm also just extending the metaphor and saying a really quality cake doesn't need icing.
That's
what you're talking about, is that's what we're trying to build.
And I think it's really important for your listeners to make that distinction, because most people think fun is the icing. Well, okay, we need more ping pong. We need to have our own chef. No, I mean, that's like nice, but that's not where you get the real value from the workforce, and people don't feel like they're winning. If they have the winning, they love the icing, and the icing carries itself. And then you can do a lot of other things, but you get the idea. Now, I'll give you one of the things at Eagles Flight, because we have this environment. We have five very key values. The first is based off the Eagle acronym, but the first one is exceptional service. A is absolute quality. G is genuine friendliness, leadership excellence, and ethical profit. So when we bring people in, we say, look, these are the values. Let's talk about the values. You don't need a lot of leadership. You need to understand the values, because when you're faced with a situation, decide what to do against the values. Is this good for the customer? Is this high quality? Is this ethical problem? And they go, okay, well, the guardrails are gone and they've been replaced by a vision of excellence. So I say to many organizations, this whole idea begins with giving people clarity on what success looks like and how you're going to get there. And in our world, genuine friendliness is that fun component. We want you to, and in fact, I was sitting in my office. We sold our buildings during COVID, but my office faced out the parking lot. And a new employee was walking out the door with an older employee, a more senior employee. And you could tell there was something going on there. And afterwards, when they came back, I asked them, I said, what was happening there? And the more senior employee said, well, we were going for ice cream. And I said, yeah, great. She said, but it was 3:00 PM, and the new employee said, we're walking in front of the CEO's office. Aren't we going to get our knuckles wrapped for going for ice cream at 3:00 PM? And the other employee said, no, if he knew we were going, he'd come. He doesn't care.
The problem here is they didn't invite you.
Yeah, that was exactly. Because they were learning this value of the importance of friendship, but genuine friendship, because that built trust and rapport and relationship back on the job. Now, they would say that was a fun environment. Yeah. And it was a fun environment, but it was a fun environment that was part of four other values that talked about quality of service. So when you have a holistic view like that, fun becomes a component. It's not really the goal. It's not something that you superficially add on. It is a component of how people want to behave every day. And you want them to feel like coming to work is really fun and I enjoy it. And then I go home and have fun. But that doesn't take you off the hook for delivering on your accountabilities and being brilliant. That's where the other values come in. So I share that because it gives you a balanced perspective.
And that is and can be and should be fun in and of itself as well. The whole package. Our guest today is Phil Gelthardt. He's the CEO of Eagles Flight. And Phil, I've got another question for you. But before we go there, where can listeners connect with you, learn more about your work, and take a next step if they're interested?
Great question. Thank you for asking, David. You can go on eaglesflight.com. That's eagleslight.com. And that will get you to the company. You can go to philgeldart.com and that will get you to me. And I just wrote a new book just published by Forbes called Leading What Matters Most, which talks about a lot of these things. And you can buy that wherever great books are sold. So three ways to get to me.
Excellent. I hope you'll take advantage of that. Obviously, Phil, you've got so much wisdom here. The question that is coming up for me as we're talking about this is, and I'm going to share this example, and it made me just wince so badly at the time it happened. But now I have some compassion here, and I'd like to talk about this from a leadership perspective, because this is a self-management question, I think, ultimately. I was working in an organization, and this was not, just for the record, when you asked me to think of the worst boss I'd ever had, this was not that person. This individual, CEO, ton of stress at the moment. And at any rate, he heard people laughing in the break room. And direct quote, he turned to me, I was the chief operating officer. He turned to me and said, "They are laughing in the break room." I mean, and I'm not getting anywhere near the level of vehemence he had. He was upset. He said, "Don't they understand what's at stake here?" And I mean, bless his heart, I don't know how much pressure it takes to interpret laughter as a negative thing when it's in the context of the break room and people taking a break from their work. But I am curious, with that kind of as a stage setting, what you see as the barriers that get in the way of individual human beings who are leaders. You're talking about individual leaders who struggle with this approach and some of the barriers that get in their way. What are some of those common things that get in the way, and how do you help, or how do you recommend a listener who's struggling with that overcome that or move through it?
Yeah. I could probably rattle off three or four things, but let me tell you a story. I worked for a guy who was unbelievable. I mean, he was phenomenal. He was incredibly tough, very, 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 very tough. Focused on the numbers, focused on the results, held you accountable like to the 11th hour, every minute counted. Everything you think of as like a world-class focused executive, he was. We went for lunch one day, and he asked me, we were talking business. And somewhere around dessert, he said, "By the way, what's important in your career?" Like out of the blue. And I said, "Well," and we began to talk. He said, "Just a minute." Went to the phone. He canceled all his appointments for the afternoon. Came back and he said, "Okay, let's chat about you and your career." The whole afternoon, David. Wow. I could not believe it.
Knowing how much he valued every minute.
Yeah. Are you kidding me? I mean, it was all about me for the whole afternoon. And I went home to my wife. I said, "You know what? He really cared about me. He didn't care about what I was producing, didn't care about what I was delivering. And for the afternoon, he didn't even care about what the company was producing and what the sales were. He cared about me." And it wasn't superficial care. It was like 4 hours of, "What about this? And what are you thinking? And what motivates you? And why is that important?" And I mean, it was an amazing experience. And I learned from that, that at the core of who he was care for each person. Now, he had an obligation to deliver the results, but he cared. So the answer to your question, when you say, okay, so, you know, what should a leader be doing and how do you get there? I think if you don't honestly care, whatever you do is not going to work, because people will see through it as manipulative, or I learned these three techniques, or I'm supposed to give you 10 minutes to hear about your day. So talk. Okay, we're done. Now, it's hard to, because unless you knew this particular individual and how serious he was to realize the significance of that care. But when you were in the elevator with him in the morning, he'd say, "How are you doing?" And if you said fine, I didn't say it. "How are you doing? How are you doing?" It wasn't like, "How are you doing?" It's like, "How are you doing?" And now, you had like 13 floors to give me answer. But if you just said fine, it was, no, it's good. Things are good at home and I'm excited about work. My kids are getting their tonsils out. Okay, good. Let me know if I can help. And out the door. So it was what he had at his heart was this, I really care about you as a person above all else. Okay, have we got that clear? Good. Now, what about this? And where's that? But if need be, and something happens, and you need to shift gears because you as a human being need my involvement, I am here for you. Don't take advantage of it. I'm not here to be your psychiatrist. I'm not your father, but I do care, and I'm open to you. And I would say to you, David, that people need to reflect and say, if I am going to be charged with the responsibility of the lives of human beings, I better care about those lives, because it's not just the life, right? You go home to your spouse, you go home to your kids, and if your boss is miserable, then you're going to be miserable at your career. I mean, the consequences are mammoth. And very often, you know, we were once asked to teach a whole series of courses on leadership and the time, very tight time frame. And I said, I want to take the very first day and talk about this idea of caring for people and releasing human potential to 60%. They said, we're paying you to teach communication and goal setting and coaching. We're not. I said, great. No, you're paying me to make your leaders great. Let me set the stage in that first day. And then all those other things will become skills that you can use to manifest your appreciation for the fact that you are responsible for releasing human potential. And you can't release potential if people don't think you care about them. So they said, okay, do your thing. But it made a huge difference because we set the leaders up to, they had never thought about that. They think they're being paid to manage. They're not. They're being paid to optimize shareholder value. And to optimize shareholder value, you got to release human potential to the fullest. And to do that, you got to start thinking about people and caring and respect and like, whoa, really? Okay, all right. But the paybacks are huge. So I share that because it's a better answer than just listing five things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fundamental, so if I break that down and take this story and the application, so listener, if you're feeling overwhelmed, feeling stressed, and goes, I just don't know how to do any of this, and coming back to your heart, and you know, we talk about the show is all about practical skills for human-centered leaders, right? What are the communication skills?
Yep.
Team skills. All of those skills starts with, do you, as Phil said, do you genuinely care about the human being in front of you, or the human beings on your team or in your organization, as human beings?
And I will give you a really practical tool here. So we sell leadership training around the world. And I say to people, you know, I could save you an awful lot of money. I can tell you in 10 minutes how to become a 5 minutes, how to be a world-class leader. You don't have to pay me a penny. And the answer is this. As a leader, you need to go and have lunch or breakfast with an employee and ask them this one question. What do I have to do to be a better leader? Just that one question. Now, they will not be truthful, probably. They will take something superficial and light. And they will watch what you do with it. And you're going to have to say, look, I may not agree with you. So I may not do what you want, but I want to hear and I will give you my feedback. So now you go away and you process what that employee said. And you do that with every one of your direct reports. And you think, okay, is there an opportunity for me to change? And then you do it again the next month. And they'll be a little more honest with you. And by the time you get to the sixth month, they'll be saying, well, listen, Phil, frankly, you talk too much. You interrupt me all the time.
But now they know they can trust you with that information.
Exactly. And if you change, what you are really doing is you are allowing the person that you are leading to guide you as to how they need to be led in order to give you their best. And some people are going to want you to talk a lot because that's their style. And others are going to want you to listen a lot because that's their style. But you get that and you respond to each person. And you learn as a leader how to meet what that person needs because they've told you. Now, to do that, there's got to be a lot of ego suppression. There's got to be, but at the heart, it's because you really care about what the person says. But practically, ask them. Just go ask them and then do something about it.
one of the, if not the very best way to get the feedback you need to grow as a leader. It's fun. The interesting thing about that, we call it a listening tour or a do-it-yourself 360, but the interesting thing about that feedback, your manager can never give you that feedback, ever.
That's right.
The only people who can give it to you are the people you're leading, and the only way you're going to get that is to ask for it and do it over time, like you said, to build the trust so people can see, oh, I did share that. He didn't blow up. She did follow through on that. Oh, wow. Okay. And then you build. And then you want a practical way to communicate that you truly care about that human being.
Exactly. This is if you want to go one step further, if you as a listener think, okay, that sounds good, but honestly, that's just not me, or I don't know how to do it. Take somebody with you for lunch who you trust and say, after lunch, give me feedback. How did I do? So the employee doesn't care that there's two of you instead of one. I mean, they'll be a little more reticent at first, but you say, listen, I really want to get better. And so I've got a personal coach here who happens to be my buddy in payroll, and he's going to tell me how I respond. I mean, it's just, how committed are you to this outcome? If you're really committed, go do it. It won't be natural. It won't be comfortable. It won't be easy. But at the end of the day, it's right back to my counselor example, right? If you think about it for a year, you're going to be better. If you don't care, you'll go back and have chaos again. It doesn't happen by wishful thinking. It's intentional action. Do this, you get this. So if your listeners say, that would be great, I wish that were me, say, yeah, but that's just wishful thinking. If you want that, you're going to have to do something about it. So here are some practical things. Go do it and see for yourself whether it makes a difference.
And 100% can be you. If it's not today, it can be tomorrow.
That's right. And you know, David, I'm just still want to press on your time here. One of the things I share with leaders, see, listen, we've had this conversation and you're thinking about you leading others. How would you like it if your leader heard this conversation and treated you that way? They go, oh, I'd really like that. I'd like to be treated more like an adult. I'd like to be heard. Okay, your people are like you.
So do they. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, Phil, we could go all day. This is rich and such a good conversation. And I so appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your work with us. As we're talking about takeaways, there's just so many here. I mean, we started with reflecting on the successful leaders that you really respect and what we can gain from them. We talked about those four elements of change that people have to want to change. They need to know what to change. They've got to know how to translate that into actual concrete practice and get specific, behaviorally specific. And then the accountability for results. And we've been talking at the end here about how we truly care for the human beings in front of us and on our teams, and starting with that heart and mind, and love this practical tool, huge proponent of going and having that conversation and getting as specific as you can. What's one way I could be more effective leader for you? And listening and saying, thank you for sharing. You don't have to thank them for the idea, may or may not be usable for you, but thank them for contributing to your improvement. Phil, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Really. My pleasure, David. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. Listener, be sure to subscribe on your favorite platform so you don't miss an episode. We've got so many more practical human-centered leadership skills for you. And until next time, be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.